Patreon. Dark. Let me get the kisses out of the way for the patrons. Mwah. In the theater of the mind. Mwah. That's for you. Thank you so much for supporting the pod. Scott is back. And we're going to talk more about the Chelsea Hotel. Brad.
Yeah. Thanks, patrons. Real quick, Bookends Meeting Club. Next one is Aaron Gwynn's All God's Children. So pick that up. People who have been following the show, you probably know Aaron Gwynn, who's joined us on a couple of episodes. His great Western novel, All God's Children. It's out there. We're going to talk about it. I think you're going to enjoy it.
That is on May 14th.
Thank you.
And all of the Bookends book club schedule is at artofdarkpod.com/book-club. Yeah. And of course, patrons, you choose your level of involvement. If you want to join in and kind of be on the pod, we only release it on Patreon, but this is how you can, you know, be on the pod. You could even just sit in on the Zoom. You don't even have to. Yeah. You can lurk, whatever. And if you don't join us on the day, we put it out so you can listen wherever you are.
Yeah. It's good. It's good fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Good times.
Yeah. Let me, so one thing we're going to talk about on the After Dark. Kevin, I don't know why I keep getting them scrambled.
Case of the Mondays.
it's true, man. It's Monday. It's a little rough. I wanted to talk about Eve Klein. Kevin, first, have you heard of Eve Klein? Do you know who Eve Klein is?
Only the name.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
Fashion, right? Fashion.
There's Eve Saint Laurent is fashion. Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm sure. I don't think Eve Klein got involved with fashion himself. That I'm aware of, but I think a lot of people in the fashion.
Yeah, then I don't. I have no clue.
Yeah. I Scott, it seems like you might know a little bit about him. Is that right?
The blue has been incorporated, the famous blue in, I want to say Tiffany's, but I'm not sure. I just know from dating exes who wear expensive heels that the blue was incorporated in something at some point.
Yeah, it's a distinctive blue, and that is maybe what he's most famous for now is the Klein blue. Apparently, what really is the Klein blue, and he did patent this to some extent. It's a resin that the pigment is suspended in, so that when you see it in person, it actually refracts the light in a fairly unique way.
I know who this is. This is the person who did the nudes. Head nudes.
He did do the nudes.
Yep. I've seen these. Yeah. Okay.
Paintbrushes, as he called them. Yeah,
okay. Very good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So interesting guy. And he's worthy of talking about a little bit. Tragically, you know, short life, 1928 to 1962. It was about 34 years. So young guy. French artist, born in Nice. He was the child of two painters, both of whom were of some stature in different parts of the Parisian art world. One in the abstract scene and one in what's called the post-impressionist scene. Kind of comes out of it like you're going to be an artist, kid, right off the bat. At the age of 19, Klein and his friends lay on a beach in the south of France. And I love this. I love the enthusiasm of this. He and his friends divided the world between themselves. His friend Armand chose the earth, his friend Pascal chose words, and Klein chose the ethereal space surrounding the planet, which he then proceeded to sign. Quote, with his famous symbolic gesture of signing the sky, Klein had foreseen in a reverie the thrust of his art. From that time onwards, a quest to reach the far side of the infinite. Right. While he had this ambition, he was also a judo champion. He rose to a fourth degree black belt, which was apparently this rank he earned was the first time a European ever earned this rank. Right. So pretty in and of itself, if that was all he did, that's a pretty notable accomplishment. Right.
It's so too bad he didn't end as a blue belt.
Right. He did it in Tokyo though too, didn't he?
Yeah. At that level, you're going to have to in judo. I mean, at that time, at that level. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Sure. And he was running. And then afterwards, he was running the Spanish judo team. Right. So because I think judo even maybe at that point was an Olympic sport. It still is now.
The Spanish judo team. But he's French.
Oh. Yeah, I'm not sure how that happened. All right. Yeah,
sure.
I don't have the normal depth on this one that I usually do, Kevin.
Throwing people around is a universal language.
It's true. Yeah, yeah. You get thrown on the ground. Yeah, you know what the person was trying to tell you for sure.
Mm-hmm.
When he was, this is interesting for I think people, you know, history of music folks. When he's 23, Eve Klein makes a record called the Monotone Symphony that is just one note for 20 minutes. And then silence for 20 minutes. So this is a precursor to the John Cage silent. What does that call? It has, I think it's a number, but
yeah, 423. Was that what it was? I'll have to look it up. Yeah.
So Klein was kind of doing
433. That. 433.
I was thinking 233. Song by,
433. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Now, shortly, not a whole lot after that, as he's sort of coming to prominence, his exhibition, The Proposed Monochrome, also, you know, translates to The Proposition Monochrome. He also called it The Blue Epic, featured 11 identical blue canvases using his patented, what he would then later patent, ultramarine pigment suspended in a synthetic resin that he called the medium, right? So he's always invoking these kind of like mystical qualities to this stuff, right? And there's a little quote here about that. The optical effect of this is, let's see. Yeah, basically, it refracts light in a way that normal paint doesn't. And so the effect in the eye is to actually transmit a color to you that you probably, you know, you may not have quite seen. If it's authentic painted Klein blue, it may look like a color you've never quite seen before. It can't be accurately represented on a computer screen, which I think in like the modern era, something that you literally cannot see on a computer screen is really interesting to me. Right.
Right. Yeah, I'm incredibly handsome in person. It doesn't come over on YouTube. I have to say, this is quite fun. You put it out into the universe, Scott. Next three new patrons get your book. We just got a new patron, and I haven't put out the episode, but I think she
nobody
qualifies.
Nobody knows that yet.
So, no, but she counts. She just came in 10 minutes ago, so I will. Mm. She'll be the first one I make offer.
She already paid. Get the next three.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think he's right.
Oh, You've been out of New York too long, man. You've been out of New York.
Nobody's going to know, man. No. I'm, you know what? Hey, yeah. Okay.
But send
I like
her
it.
Over.
I
send
like
her
it.
Over.
Yeah. I'll send her your way, man. That's we'll awesome. Hey, yeah. Cool. Very good. That'll be fun. I'll let her know the story too. She'll dig
awesome.
It. Okay. Yes. Go on. We love our patrons. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So he, at some point, he was always doing these fairly dramatic things. I mean, you don't find photos, you don't find his paintings. A lot of them are these sort of monochrome paintings. At one point, he starts painting naked women, attractive naked women, and sort of rolling them around on canvases. They become his human paintbrushes. He takes a photo of himself that's a superimposed photo that looks like he's swan diving off of an apartment balcony. He would take this photo and he would show it to people to prove that he had taught himself how to levitate, right? So very eccentric dude. He stays in the Chelsea Hotel for a period, and this is why we're talking about him. And he writes something called the Chelsea Hotel Manifesto. And it's long, and so I'm not going to read the whole thing. It's probably 12 pages long, but I picked out a couple key things that we love manifestos on here. Anytime a manifesto comes up, just because there's something so confident about a manifesto and so things so kind of funny about them in a certain way too sometimes. Like I love them almost as like their own genre of writing. So
I'm only
a little
familiar
bit
with ones by killers and mass destructors, so
right.
This will be good. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the same genre. That's the thing. It's all the same. So here's a couple bits from it. He starts out with a whole bunch of "due to the fact that," which I like. due to the fact that I have painted monochromes for 15 years, due to the fact that I have created pictorial immaterial states, due to the fact that I have manipulated the forces of the void, that one's good, due to the fact that I have sculpted with fire and with water, painted with fire and with water. I'm not sure why he does the double thing there, but anyway. Due to the fact that I have painted with living brushes, in other words, the nude body of live models covered with paint, these living brushes were under the constant direction of my command, such as a little to the right, over to the left now, to the right again. By maintaining myself at a specific and obligatory distance from the surface to be painted, I am able to resolve the problem of detachment, capital D detachment. Due to the fact that I have proposed a new conception of music with my monotone silent symphony, due to the fact that I have presented a theater of the void among countless other adventures. I'm going to skip down a bit. Just as I created a monotone silent symphony in 1947, composed in two parts, one broad continuous sound followed by an equally broad and extended silence endowed with a limitless dimension, in the same way, I attempt to set before you a written painting of the short history of my art, followed naturally by a pure and effective silence. So part of this manifesto is a bunch of blank, which I think is just like an audacious, like.
I do love stuff like this.
Uh-huh.
I really do.
Me too.
It's like trolling, mm-hmm. kind of,
mm-hmm.
you know. Yeah.
Yeah, he did strange things though. He did a thing where he how did it work? There's a thing about gold. Let me look at it real quick because it was interesting. So
these paintings of his, these body paintings are very, very striking. And they're often accompanied by a little television or monitor showing the process.
Mm-hmm.
They're not a wink. They're not
they really are
something very beautiful and unusual. Yeah. Yeah.
He definitely had a thesis. He knew what he was doing. We're going to talk a little bit about how those factored into his death, though.
Oh, great. Scott, have you ever written a manifesto?
No, but like most people, I think like I have like a vision of doing it and then going out in a blaze of glory.
Ah, right. Yeah.
That's right.
I haven't found the exact cause yet, though.
Yeah. Amen. Yeah. Mm. I do know that when I write mine, Kevin, it's going to start due to the fact. Yeah.
He kind of sounds like a dick. I don't know.
He is a bit of a dick. It's easy to like look back and be like, oh, what an interesting dude. But I'm sure if you knew him, there had to be moments where you're like, dude, come on.
Yeah.
There's not a single subject we've covered where that isn't the case. Maybe Virginia Woolf, because her husband was so simpatico. But even then, it's like, there's something about artists, man, where it's a bit much.
You realize the symphony is one note and then silence, right? You do know that's what you just did, right? It's not.
Do we know what note it was?
Oh, I'm sure we could find it. Yeah.
Okay. Let's find that.
Let me read this quick one performance art piece he did. In the performance piece, Zone de Sensibility Pictorial Immateriel, Zones of Immaterial Pictorial Sensibility, from 1959 to 1962, he offered empty cities in the empty spaces in the city in exchange for gold. He wanted his buyers to experience the void by selling them empty space. In his view, this experience could only be paid for in the purest material, which is gold. In exchange, he gave a certificate of ownership to the buyer. As the second part of the piece, he performed on the River Seine with an art critic in attendance. If the buyer agreed to set fire to the certificate, Klein would throw half the gold into the river in order to restore the natural order that he had unbalanced by selling the empty space. He used the other half of the gold to create a series of gold leaf works, which, along with a series of pink monochromes, began to augment his blue monochromes towards the end of his life. Another quick couple things from the Chelsea Manifesto, and then I'm going to tell you the story of how he died.
Let me say one thing about his one note symphony or whatever he called it.
Yeah.
It's not as crazy as you might think, this kind of experimentation. Are you both familiar with the Smiths' all-time banger, How Soon Is Now? You know this one? Yeah. That song is all... is what's the bar sign? Is that sharp? F sharp? In music. But in any case, they wrote this song with the idea that they would build a song, an entire song around one chord. And that's all, you know, that one chord.
Right, so, you know, generating a rhythm out of it of some sort, right?
Right. Yeah. And using, So just an interesting, sort of thing to think about.
This reminds me of Lou Reed was making this. I don't think he accomplished it before he died, but he was trying to make an 18-minute silent, but like in the key or decibel, or whatever that a dog hears. His wife and he were, he had to have been influenced by this guy, because there's like, I've heard Lou Reed say stuff like this, but he was trying to make a silent to the human 18-minute dog symphony. And he said that dogs' attention spans are short, so he didn't want to make it longer than 20 minutes.
That's awesome.
But the idea was for the dog to take the owner.
Yeah. That's awesome. Let me read one part from the last part from the manifesto, because I think it's an interesting turn he makes. At present, I'm particularly excited by bad taste. I have the deep feeling that there exists, in the very essence of bad taste, a power capable of creating those things situated far beyond what is traditionally termed the work of art. I wish to play with human feeling, with its morbidity, in a cold and ferocious manner. Only very recently, I have become a sort of grave digger of art. Some of my latest works have been coffins and tombs. During the same time I succeeded in painting with fire, using particularly powerful and searing gas flames, some of them measuring 3 to 4 meters high, I used these to bathe the surface of the painting in such a way that it registered the spontaneous trace of fire. In sum, my goal is twofold. First of all, to register the trace of human sentimentality in present-day civilization, and then to register the trace of fire, which has engendered this very same civilization, that of the fire itself. And all of this because the void has always been my constant preoccupation, and I believe that fires burn in the heart of the void as well as in the heart of man. So this is intense stuff. Like, he's so
French.
He's going hard, right?
Yeah, cool.
So French with obviously rich parents.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This guy didn't have to worry about money ever, probably. Yeah, for sure. So let me just tell you about his death, because he did die young. As we said, he died at 34. Basically, he had this event where he played the monotone silent symphony, and he had the models. He did the living paintbrush thing, and it was filmed, and there was a bit of a cocktail party kind of around it, but it was a performance art piece, but he was sort of recapitulating this work he had done with the living brushes. And then it was filmed, and turned into, it was turned into the film called Mondo Cane, and it was presented at Cannes Film Festival in 1962. I'm going to just read from this. LittleRedUmbrella.com wrote a pretty interesting article about this.
D major is the
D major
D, in House D of major. Now? D major. No, in whatever this is, monotone silence.
Oh, okay, so you have to imagine a highly resonant D major playing for That's 20 funny. Minutes.
Straight, That's the same right? key that Jimmy Eat World's The Middle is in.
Is that right?
Yeah, so.
Interesting. All right. Interesting. Okay, he left. Oh, after the film aired, he left utterly humiliated by the portrait done of him, which completely distorted his work. Unbeknownst to him, the sequence, which was to have lasted 20 minutes, the length of the note, was reduced to approximately 5 minutes. The monotone silent symphony, which began as planned on a D major chord, that's here, was rapidly replaced by the soundtrack of some other tune. The blue covered models were filmed making somewhat ridiculous lascivious gestures bearing no relation whatsoever to the session staged by Klein. The same evening, Eve showed the early signs of his first heart attack. He would die a week or two later. So he was the legend is he's so distressed by this, how it was represented, that it basically killed him. So interesting. And, you know, he spent quite a bit of time at the Chelsea Hotel. So he's in there amongst the Patti Smiths and the Delmore Schwartzes and supposedly the Mark Twains and the the Sid Vicious's and all of these people.
I think this was one of his only art shows that he didn't sell anything either. He like famously sold no pieces. Right.
I think that's correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Wow. And so there was a I think there was a sense of like, had the novelty worn off? Were people sick? Like, you know, because like we said, he's a bit much, right? There's a point where you're like, all right, come on, Eve. Like, why don't you paint something that people like actually want to look at?
Yeah. It's interesting that like, there's just been so many of these in the Chelsea that like, you don't even know who this person is. Or like, I had never heard of Delmore Schwartz before you sent me that message, right? Yeah. I spent all day today. I read so much of his poetry. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Died penniless.
Great.
Yeah, died penniless. Nobody knew who he was in the Chelsea. Like just another guy passed through, great artist, like, but has been overshadowed by the other like great artist, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. He was a big deal. There was like a period in his life where he was right up there with the other sort of poet greats, and he kind of lost his mind as part of the reason why he sort of faded out of attention or whatever. But yeah, he's brilliant. He's a brilliant poet. Yeah. Yeah. So, Yeah. I like reading these things about Eve Klein, not because I want to be Eve Klein, but every once in a while I read this. And as a writer, I think like, man, I got to go harder. Like,
but like, I love the misanthropic, just like, obviously this guy hates his fans, the world, like his number one job is to, seems like, to annoy people, right?
Right, right.
So right. I like people who take on, like, embody these roles of just like the villain, sort of, you know?
He was never sat down and said, what would be a painting that somebody would like? There's
right.
no like consideration of the audience or like, you know, those people, none of that matters. He's preoccupied with the void, man.
The void.
But those post-war artists were all wrestling with the post-apocalypse and the depth of human depravity and human evil. So how do you respond after that?
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
We really still are. I mean, so that's fun. Woo! <Yeah. laughs> I found Scott, did you have something else that I didn't want to talk over you?
Oh no, that's okay. I like talking about the darkness, so yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You're on the right show.
Yeah. Now that you mentioned like in Delmore Schwartz, who are some other poets that are influential on you or that you like? I'm always looking, I have some poets that I like, but I always feel like I don't know enough. Who are some
you know Jim Carroll? Do you know who Jim Carroll was?
Yeah,
he's like my favorite poet. He was the reason basically that I started writing. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And I don't know any stories specifically of him at the Hotel Chelsea, but like he must have been because he was like kind of with Patti Smith at those times and like had his punk band. So this is just like another
lost. He's right in that scene.
Yeah, and probably another lost story of the hotel, like just another thing that passed through that nobody happened to write down, and now you know, we'll never know. But he's my favorite. He like I feel I grew up Catholic, like he's, you know, I don't know. I feel the most connected.
The one true faith. I have to say that by contract. Yeah.
Well, that's right. I'm going to heaven and the rest of you are screwed.
Yeah. That's right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, very listen, cool. So I just found a story about Jim Carroll, and this is written this is from the comments section of Rolling Stone by commenter Dennis Spencer. So take it or leave it here. But
Okay.
In 1978, I lived at the Chelsea Hotel in New York City. One afternoon, I heard a knock on my door. When I opened it, there stood a tall, drugged out looking skinny guy about my age with stringy red hair. With him were two other guys that were larger and even scarier looking than him. With a fast talking New York accent and a desperate tone, the redheaded one held up an LP and blasted into this rapid fire sales pitch. Listen, I know you don't know me, but my name is Jim Carroll and I have a band called the Jim Carroll Band and I am on Rolling Stones records and tapes. I have a single coming out next month called People Who Died. I just this minute got back from England and what I have here in my hands is a copy of the new Rolling Stones album called Some Girls. This is the only copy that exists in the United States. I haven't even heard it. Nobody has heard it. Not one single person in the United States has heard it, but you can be the first. My only question to you is, do you have a stereo? Now, wait that's a second. Awesome. Yes, I had a stereo, a very nice one, as a matter of fact. More importantly, I also had a fair amount of drugs in my room that took a whole day of hustling to get, and I wasn't about to let this trio of losers bust into my room and take my shit. The album, this is taking lots of turns. The album did look authentic, though, with the Rolling Stones logo and the redhead story had a ring of authenticity, so I let them in. As everybody knows, the first song on the album is Miss You, which begins that opening line, na, 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 in falsetto. I'm not a Stones fan. We all had a hard time figuring out if I had the turntable set right, set at the right speed. But of course we did. We then listened to both sides of this fabulous album. And of course, it was, of course, great. On the way out, Jim flipped a paperback book to me, which, of course, was Basketball Diaries. Is that one of his books?
Great book.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a great
book.
And
said, check it out. This is the story of my life. One day you can say you met me.
Wow.
That's crazy. I've never heard that. That's amazing.
That's a great story.
It's from the cop. Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds like him because he was like a real bad junkie. Also, side note, that is the best Rolling Stones record, start to finish. It's a perfect record. It doesn't have all the hits, but it's their only perfect record.
Wow.
Like, yeah.
So you can imagine you're just sitting there. You're just sitting there, knock, knock, knock on the door. And somebody's like, no one has heard this except the Rolling Stones and their engineer or whatever. we'll listen to it if you have a stereo. Like, what a
I thought he was going to be, you can have this for a bag of heroin. So
right, that's what I thought it was gonna be too. How I bought the only copy of the Rolling Stones album for a
and
small
then they leaked it
heroin.
Onto the internet and nobody bought the Rolling Stones record.
Right. Crazy. Wild. Yeah. That was a good find, Kevin.
Yeah. Nice deep dive.
Yeah. I know we're coming to the end of the After Dark. I want to thank you, Scott, for coming on, Brad, for coordinating this. I did find a Delmore Schwartz poem, and it's on poemhunter.com, which horrifically has a 5-star rating system in place where you can rate this poem. And I'm going to read this poem to you fellows. Is that all right? Yeah, I will. I'm going to read this. It's 5 or 6 paras, but just this feels like a Chelsea Hotel kind of a poem. All right. When I fall asleep and even during sleep, I hear quite distinctly voices speaking, whole phrases, commonplace and trivial, having no relation to my affairs. Dear mother, is any time left to us in which to be happy? My debts are immense. My bank account is subject to the court's judgment. I know nothing. I cannot know anything. I have lost the ability to make an effort. But now as before, my love for you increases. You are always armed to stone me. Always. It is true. It dates from childhood. For the first time in my long life, I am almost happy. The book almost finished. Almost seems good. It will endure, a monument to my obsessions, my hatred, my disgust. Debts and inquietude persist and weaken me. Satan glides before me, saying sweetly, rest for a day. You can rest and play today. Tonight you will work. When night comes, my mind, terrified by the arrears, bored by sadness, paralyzed by impotence, promises, tomorrow, I will tomorrow. Tomorrow, the same comedy enacts itself with the same resolution, the same weakness. I am sick of this life of furnished rooms. I am sick of having colds and headaches. You know my strange life. Every day brings its quota of wrath. You little know a poet's life, dear mother. I must write poems, the most fatiguing of occupations. I am sad this morning. Do not reproach me. I write from a cafe near the post office, amid the click of billiard balls, the clatter of dishes, the pounding of my heart. I have been asked to write a history of caricature. I have been asked to write a history of sculpture. Shall I write a history of the caricatures of the sculptures of you in my heart? Although it costs you countless agony, although you cannot believe it necessary and doubt that the sum is accurate, please send me money enough for at least 3 weeks.
Oof.
Delmore Schwartz.
Heavy.
And that's it all. Baudelaire poem.
Does it have a year?
It does not have a year, but Well, it says Friday. Well, no, that was when it was posted.
Can I give you a little Delmore Schwartz, and we can kind of end on this because it actually ties. And I only want to do it because it ties a couple things together we've already mentioned.
Yeah.
Schwartz. I'm just going to read quick from Wikipedia. Schwartz was unable to repeat or build on his early successes later in life as a result of alcoholism and mental illness, and his last years were spent in seclusion at the Chelsea Hotel. In fact, Schwartz was so isolated from the rest of the world that when he died in his hotel room on July 11th, 1966 at age 52, two days passed before he was in the morgue, right? So completely isolated. Now, here's where it ties into something we actually mentioned, somebody we already mentioned. Schwartz's former student at Syracuse University was Lou Reed, the singer and principal songwriter for the band Velvet Underground. Wanting to dedicate a song to Schwartz on their debut album, Reed chose European Sun, as it had the fewest lyrics. Schwartz abhorred rock and roll lyrics. The song was recorded in April 1966, 3 months before Schwartz's death, but was not released until March 1967. According to musicologist Richard Witz, the song reads like little more than a song of loathing towards Schwartz, who refused to see Reed while he was living at the Chelsea Hotel. So there's a whole glass bead game you can play, just starting with the Chelsea Hotel and all these directions that you can go. Yeah, it's amazing.
Wild. Well, thanks again for coming on, Scott. This is a real pleasure. It's cool to talk to somebody who's been there. I always love talking to New Yorkers. Hey, if you ever move out to the Midwest, don't sleep on the Twin Cities. Good housing stock in St. Paul. You'd be more than welcome. Fellas, one last question. What rating do you think that poem has on Poem Hunter?
It better have a 10.
It should have been
out of five. That was better than Bukowski or anything else. That was awesome. Yeah,
that was good. 5.
2.6.
Not the bathrooms were dirty and the waitress was mean to me.
And my soul can move mountains.
Right. Oh my God.
My honeypot. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like trying to do Rupi Kaur quotes. Yeah.
Oh God.
And ending the episode.
Yeah. Right there.
Bye. Thanks, everybody.